I'm here with Dr. Martin Shaw, and he is the author of many books, including The Night Wages, also A Branch from the Lightning Tree, Snowy Tower, other books. And we're talking about going home. And then you really said something very provocative. You said that this is also, there's a danger in this right now. How are we skewing that in a way that isn't serving the higher good or serving the earth or serving life itself?
Well, as I was saying, in Greek myth, the word for this yearning is nostos, the homeward journey. In the Welsh, some of them call it haraeth, which again is slightly more intangible. But it's really a feeling of longing and the desire to sate that longing. Now, longing is an interesting thing because you probably remember there's some lines from Rumi via my dear pal Coleman, who says something along the lines of the feeling of longing in your heart is God speaking back to you. It is the return journey. So longing itself is already a divine accomplishment. God is already nurturing you and talking to you if you have the ears to hear it.
I just remember for myself when someone confronted me with the idea of longing as that being a really powerful place to be. And I can remember rejecting that entirely because it was so, to be in longing is to never have resolve then. So,
yeah, but don't you think that what makes a grown-up is living with incompleteness? It's not satiated desire. No culture worth its salt accomplishes itself by what it got. It's what it learnt not to live with for the sake of other people. That's when I see a mature person, when I see a real human being, it's actually that. There's a lovely Anglo-Saxon phrase, entering the bone house. And part of getting older, part of this rather mystical proposition that eventually, maybe towards the end of our life, we could become a human being, is that you're going to have to dwell in certain appropriate tensions. You're going to have to live with complexity. As you get older, you're going to have to learn to live with less in a certain way. And to be able to do that, to be able to try and operate and cut out the lies is actually quite a thing for a younger person to witness. So if we're really interested in what is coming after us, if we're really invested in the ones that are to come, one of the things that we can do is pay attention to the crooked little walk of our own life and give it language. Because in myth, until you say something, it's just not true. Until you speak it, until you give it language. Whenever you meet a wise old woman from the forest, they say, what is the condition of your heart right now? And you say, well, it's this, 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 and this. But I daren't speak of it. And the way the story will always begin, this is in the fairy tale tradition, really, is that you have to find a way to give voice to your longing or give voice to your desire or give voice to your sorrow. Whatever it is, it needs breath on it. It needs breath. Some of you will know the story of Psyche and Eros. And Psyche has to go down to the underworld. And she has to hold a gold coin between her teeth to meet to pay the ferryman. And I've spent years telling that story and speculating on it. And it's something to do for me. My experience of that image is her breath is on the coin. In other words, it's her life. The woman lived.
She had to hold it
in her teeth.
That's where you're talking about you live with a myth. You keep living with
that's
it and living
keep
with it.
Up.
And at different times in our life, different parts of it are going to speak to us in different ways. Is
that's
that
exactly
what you're saying?
That's right. I am not a proponent of this idea of, you know, live your myth. I think myths, plural, live us. And they arrive often two or three myths within the course of a day, let alone a decade. And the real complexity is that is myths want different things from us. But an old way of looking at a myth would be, if you don't show that fidelity to it, you don't. It means you're not negotiating with the myth. The myth lives itself through you and can possess you. So there is a prudence in absorbing and telling stories because you feed the story. If you are perennially in devouring mode, gimme, 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 the stories tend to charge through us rather than negotiate with us.
Okay, I have a recurring dream. And this dream is I'm on a certain beach and the waves are coming in and suddenly the beach is emptied of all water. Mm. And suddenly I see the bottom of this little inlet with all the, it actually is quite frightening and quite awful. It's not beautiful at all. It's got crap in it. It's got rocks in it. It's got all sorts of stuff. And people have thrown garbage in it. And so I see all of this. Then I read your book, and here is this woman who is enticed by these two fellows, and she follows them, and they turn out to be polar bears. Mm. And suddenly, in this myth that you're relating, she's walking on the bottom of the sea.
Yeah.
And she's becoming bone. Her flesh is falling away. It just, Martin, I don't, it somehow it just reminded me of this recurring dream. And now this is what you're talking about. Maybe when a myth starts reading you or starts living you, because it is, help me out here.
Yeah, you're perfect. You're right on track. Myths generally ask more of us than we want to give.
Yeah, I don't want to go there to that terrible place.
So in other words, so you've got to negotiate with it. You've got to go, okay, what do you want from me? Because if I'm not conscious, you're just going to take it. I don't want to be overly superstitious about this. I'm not trying to create kind of pandemonium in our listenership, but stories are demanding a kind of psychic and emotional sophistication from us. Something I've been wondering recently and I've been talking about is this. Are we so culturally dulled to the mythic now that we're receiving fake news from our own psyche? That even our still small voice is now malfunctioning.
Uh-oh.
I have stories which would suggest this. I don't think that that is a terminal diagnosis. I think that there's something to be done. And the thing that I do, and in a way that's all I can speak of, is my own practice and approach to this, is to go back to these old tales and let them work on me. I articulate them. I tell them. There's something about the orality of storytelling. Again, back to Rumi, learn a poem by heart because it'll die of cold on the page. Learn a story by heart. Learn, to use a word you just used, learn the bones of the thing. It doesn't need to be a recital. It needs to be a telling. Because then the story itself, as a living being, you know, I'm an animist. The story is alive. And so the story is then getting fed by your telling of the story.
And as an animist, it's like, everything is alive. Is that
Yeah, there are, and there's many different ways of being alive. There's different, many different ways of expression. This is something that I learned through all these years doing wilderness rites of passage. But if you start telling the thing, or writing the thing, or drawing the thing, or dancing the thing, or communicating it in some fashion, it doesn't need to show up in your life as fate.
Ah, there's something that you said earlier that caught me. And I'm glad to hear that if you live it, that maybe you don't have to go down that road. But where you use the word tributary.
Mm.
And it just reminds me, and you talked about tributary then taking you to the bigger river of whatever it is that you're looking for. But it's a kind of attention we have to give to finding those tributaries. I call it, like, it's not looking directly at it. It's like it grabs us out of the corner of our eye. It's not a direct focus. Would you?
Yes, I think that's brilliant. It reminds me of a character, actually, who in mythology we've really got wrong, which is Medusa. Medusa has had an inaccurate rap. She's a very interesting and potent being, or a force field even. But one of the things that you do get in Greek myth is if you're encountering an energy like hers, the way to do it, to not be annihilated, is to gaze not on her, but on her reflection through a shield. Now, what I see, I meet thousands of young people every year who are involved in activism, the state of our times, you know, God bless them, you know. But the burnout is very high, because if you keep looking at the horror of the condition without artistry, without that shield, you go up in flames. You need a deflection. This is something that art has always done. If I imagine growing up somewhere without this kind of mythic education I'm implying we need, I would imagine that just getting in touch with one's personal trouble, you know, Jungians would call it the wound, would feel like a move towards truth. You know, it's not this anesthetized, Disneyfied, mollified world. But the problem is myth demands something else from you. It says, you know what, stirring your pen in your wound may be useful to you, buddy, but it doesn't make beauty, which is high currency in the myth world. It doesn't make art, and it's not really a gift.
Just stirring the wound, just not being aware of it, but not dwelling in it, not living in it. Is that what you're saying?
You can deepen in it. Dwelling and deepen don't feel like the same thing. The Night Wages is an attempt to deepen into my particular predicament. It's to deepen into a certain incompleteness in my life that I have to recognize is part of my story, and I have no idea if it'll ever change. I was earlier on using the image of Nostos. Well, you know, I didn't make it back to Ithaca. I'm still out there at sea on my little raft.
I'm here with Dr. Martin Shaw, and he's the author of The Night Wages. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, drmartinshaw.com, DR, the abbreviation, drmartinshaw.com. Or you can go to the other website, systemystica.com, C-I-S-T-A-M-Y-S-T-I-C-A, systemystica.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Martin Shaw, and he's the author of The Night Wages. And we're talking about myths and how they work in our lives and how they can really change us and deepen us and move us and inform us and claim us. I want to use the word claim us. We can be claimed by a myth, I think. I think it can actually come out and grab us. I think we all have had something, we've heard something or seen something, and it just like reaches out and grabs us. And what I hear about your work is that you encourage us to stay there. Don't turn away too fast.
No, you know, myths get hurt feelings, you know. They get hurt feelings. They don't want to see us flirting with a dozen of them. They don't know if we're serious or not. You know, only a few hundred years back, a new story turning up in your settlement or village is big news. So the story needs a libation. If, as we have discussed, it's a form of nutrition, you've got to pay for the meal. One of the ways of paying for the meal is the telling of the story, or exploring the story, doing something with it. So stories do have their purchase on us. And also, of course, there are stories that are deeply unpleasant and frightening and have us in a form of paralysis as well. Personal stories. You know, I've worked, for example, with some of my colleagues with, you know, men coming back, usually men coming back from active service in Afghanistan, or if you go back even to Vietnam, guys that have just never told their story. And a very effective thing to do is to subsume their stories within a wider, you know, it could be the Odyssey, the story of someone that just seemingly can't get home, and then bearing witness to their own stories at some point within the wider process. So you sit down together, and whether it takes 5 hours or 10 hours or 15 hours, every person gets a chance to get up and tell those stories. That's very vocational work. It is absolutely not something that I invented or came up with, but I've been around it and I know it's substantial.
And you're not talking about therapy. You're not talking about the idea of, okay, they tell their story and then you start to give them advice or thing.
There's no advice.
It's a witnessing. Yeah. Talk about the power of being a witness to such a story.
Well, you've hit on something important, which is actually great storytelling derives predominantly from your capacity to listen, much less so, actually, than your capacity to speak about it. When you bear witness to someone's story in that fashion, it's back to the mythic thing that I said earlier on. If you don't speak it, it ain't true. So you could have gone through hell in a handbag, and until you find some way to articulate, it doesn't have to be theatrical, doesn't have to be dramatic, a million people don't need to know about it, but in some way, get it on your breath, blow it out of yourself.
You spoke earlier about being local. You quoted Wendell Berry, and you said, you know, a big problem doesn't need a big answer. And so you are bringing us back to that place that we live, that we actually are, where we're planted. Reminded me of just like, okay, I don't live in a big forested area. I live more in a metropolitan area. But outside of my apartment is a tree. And so I think through your work and what I'm seeing is I'm starting to develop a new relationship with that tree. It's right there now in the seasons. It loses its leaves in the winter, and then it foliages out in the summer. And I'm starting to just love that tree. And that's kind of what you're talking about, in that there's all these big problems, but we have to act with what is close to us.
Yeah. It's the difference between being of a place and from a place. And let me talk about the difference. I have, you know, plenty of relatives going back a few generations in my family that are from a particular region of the West Country of England, Devon. Now, you could say they are from that place. But on the other hand, there's a pal of mine, a guy called Satish Kumar, who is from a very different landscape, that settled in Devon, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and has been utterly claimed by it, especially Dartmoor. Now, here's the rub. Satish is clearly of Dartmoor now. He has paid it loving, kind, diligent attention, and the land has responded in kind. Wherever the conversation around myth is going, it is going to have to include stories of migration as well as stories of what we think of as the local, because so many people are on the move. I've just written the catalogue for the Chinese dissident artist Ai Weiwei, specifically looking at the role between myth and enforced migrations that are going on all over the world at the moment. We are all in, a lot of us are in tremendous movement, whether we like it or not.
And it's a world in great disruption then, right now.
Yeah. I work a lot in America. And the thing about, for me, coming to America is that when I'm often in front of an audience, a large section of that audience, their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers and fathers sailed out mm-hmm. of Plymouth. They sailed out of Galway. They sailed out of Fishguard. And so here we are looking at each other many, many generations later. I'm someone that stayed. My family stayed. You left. But if you look at the pigment, it's awfully similar. You look at the temperament, it's similar. But from a mythic perspective, when you sail west in the Celtic tradition, you're going for two reasons. You're going either to discover the other world or you're going to die. So when I'm in America, people may not find this interesting, but it's interesting to me. I'm aware of two things. One is I'm perpetually in the other world until I return to where I come from. Everything is the other world other than this tiny section of Devon that I live in, which is the navel of the universe.
But and then I think, though, there's something really good about that kind of travel, to change your longitude and change your latitude yeah. once in a while.
Of course.
And it gives you, it kind of wakes you up. Wouldn't you say there's a waking up?
Oh, yes, yes. I was talking to Charles Eisenstein last week. We were teaching together, and we were both simultaneously longing for home and also aware that if you're home too much, a certain sedentariness can come in and you need to change of gear. I think that's going to change over the next 50 years for a lot of us, you know, how we travel. I'm somewhat of a hypocrite in that regard at the moment. I still get on planes, but it's not a good idea. More of my friends actually are rather elegantly starting to sail. So they will, you know, someone will say, I'm coming to Britain, but you've got to give me 2 weeks. I think that's maybe a way to go.
Well, there is something about slow travel that you get to notice things. I mean, we're speeding along over the earth in a plane, rather than driving, or better still, walking. I did an interview with a young man who walked from Pittsburgh to Half Moon Bay in California. Walked the whole way, step by step by step, with just a backpack, and only lived with the grace of people inviting him into their homes or sucking out on their field somewhere. And there's something about that we get to meet others in a way that we just can't when we're just traveling so fast.
My suspicion is that stories are now migrating, rather like human beings do. And I wrote recently a little book that you can get from the Sister Mystica website you mentioned, called The Five Fathoms. And really, in that story, and it is a story that I wrote, you can feel there is an Inuit story shouting to a Welsh story as the world goes up in flames. And that's something that I'm noticing amongst indigenous cultures as well as Western cultures. We are all in crisis. Everybody's in crisis. We are all concerned about our youth. We all adore the kids that are to come. And whatever little part of the world you can curate that you can raise up, now is the moment. There is no more time. It's now.
Martin, I just want to thank you so much for being part of New Dimensions today. I've been speaking with Dr. Martin Shaw. He's the author of The Night Wages and many, many other books. So if you want to know more about it, all the books and his work and his lectures and his work, also the School of Myth that you do in the West Country of England, of Great Britain. So let's talk about those websites first. Dr. Martin Shaw, drmartinshaw.com, or go to systemistica.com, systemystica, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3683.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our hosts maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.
CJSF has significantly strengthened its local and community reporting to put more stories and neighborhood news on the air. As local news continues to be under threat, your support is more important than ever. Help us rise higher and reach further with a donation to CJSF's 2025 Fund Drive at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573.